Genesis chapter 1. We read 5 verses from Genesis 1 and then 5 verses from Revelation 21. Genesis chapter 1, reading at the beginning of the creation. That's the context of everything else. It tells us where things come from. Please give your attention to the Word of God, Genesis chapter 1, reading the first 5 verses. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Now flip to the back of the Bible, the book of Revelation at chapter 21. Revelation 21. And again, I'm going to read the first 5 verses of the chapter. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne, saying, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away." And he who was seated on the throne said, "Behold, I am making all things new." Also he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." And we'll stop our reading at that point. I'm going to speak in a few evening sermons about topics that I was studying for my doctoral project. Thank you very much for the sabbatical that is now over. It was very profitable for me. I appreciate it very much. And this evening, I want to talk to you about something very basic. I want to talk to you about reality. Because here in America, crazy place that it is, there are so many people who want to talk as if they create their own reality. My truth, my reality. I remember once we turned on, I was in the car, I turned on the radio, it was KYW News Radio, and it was some kind of press conference, and all I got was, it's the governor speaking, and I'm listening, and it wasn't Rendell, so I knew it had to be the governor of either New Jersey or Delaware, right? Because I knew it wasn't the Pennsylvania governor. And he was going on, and he's just talking on and on, I'm wondering, where is this going? And he said, "My reality is," or no, I think it was "my truth is." I said, "He's going to come out as gay," and that was the next line. Very interesting. Yeah, we make people talk as though they create their own reality. Here we have a special Time edition. I bought it back in the fall. The Power of Positive Thinking. Thank you, Time Magazine. Inside this special edition, we read this. To make progress, we need to be able to imagine alternative realities, better ones, and we need to believe that we can achieve them. Such faith helps motivate us to pursue our goals. Now, there's a grain of truth to that, but it's putting it in the most grandiose way. Now, I need to imagine an alternative reality. Now, please, if your scissors are not cutting hair very well, what you need to do is think about, I wonder if I could improve on these scissors. I wonder if there's a way of improving on this tool. That's what you need to do to make progress. You don't need to imagine alternative reality. You need to look at the tool and see if you can fix it. That's what improvement requires. can I make a little incremental improvement on this thing in front of me? Some people might think that the word here is relativism, that everyone is such their own truth, okay? But at times in American culture, we're actually more towards, here's a big word for you, solipsism. Solipsism is the word for the person who says, I am what exists, and all of you are a figment of my imagination. That's solipsism. And there's times where American life starts to sound like that. Now, it's ridiculous. God made all things. We live in God's reality. It's a very basic point, but and our country's so crazy, we have to say it again. We live in God's reality. We do not create our own reality. And here's a very simple proof. If we could create our own reality, then why hasn't the coronavirus gone poof a lot sooner than now? Where were all those people who could speak their truth into being? I want them to have go back 23 months and speak the coronavirus out of existence. Why didn't they do that for us? Where were they? Well, they can't do it. Because we don't get to create alternative reality. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And we get to live in His reality. I read a lot of books for my doctoral project. I was reading about one, and as they were coming up to conversion, the husband said to the wife, you know, I want to know God's reality. And then they found the Roman Catholic Catechism, which is an impressively comprehensive book. And they became Roman Catholic. I want you to know that we also have catechism. And while they're not quite the same kind of thing as the Roman Catholic Catechism, it does give a comprehensive view of reality. It does map out the whole space. Tells us who God is. Tells us that God made all things. Tells us who we are. Tells us what's wrong with the world. Tells us what it's going to take to fix the world. That's what a good theology does. It maps out reality for you. And people need that. People need to have some kind of sense of what is going on here. And we've totally lost our minds if we think, well, it's up to me to invent it. How could it be up to you to invent it? This world was here before you got here. This world's going to be here after you leave it. It doesn't depend on you. We depend on it. That's why the creed begins. Crucial opening statement. We believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. Let's start there. Right? That's where it begins. He's the maker of heaven and earth, and therefore they are really there, the heavens and the earth. They are really out there. Just because some philosopher doesn't think he can come up with an airtight proof of the external world, it's still there. It's still out there, and we still deal with it. I remember hearing an Indian Christian speaking, who's a famous apologist, and he was talking about the tendency of some people to say, well, you know, Western religion is either or, but Eastern religion is both and. And he was saying, yeah, in India, you still look both ways before you step into the road, because they will either be the bus or you. All right, reality will come crashing in upon you, and you'll be dead. It's either the bus or you, even in India. Yes. It's not as if it works differently there, because it's a both and culture. We live in reality. Now, anyone objects that reality is flawed, we see in the first thing that we read that God made it very good. And we see in the second thing that we read that God promises to make all things new. To make it without tears, without death, without mourning or crying or pain. Things will get better. And the great improvement will come not from us and our imaginings or our efforts. It will come from the Lord returning. And it's God's reality. And so I want to encourage you in very specific ways in which we need to think clearly and speak clearly. So it's to give God the glory. Time magazine. To improve things, you must imagine alternate realities. No. To improve things, you have to think of a better way to do X, Y, or Z. You just say, can I improve this tool? Can I improve this lesson plan? Can I improve this policing technique? Can I improve this treatment for cancer? Imagination probably has a place in all that, sure. But to call it an alternative reality obscures more than it helps. We need to work on the problem, not on obliviating. I encourage you to shun the talk of alternate realities and get down to the hard work of improving whatever the problem is. I want you to speak clearly. Right and wrong are not a matter merely of opinion or of feelings or of bias or of groupthink or of some belief that gives one group an evolutionary advantage on another group. No, right and wrong are innate to reality because God made all things and God is a moral God. And so certain things work and certain things don't work because that's how God made it to be. And right and wrong are innate because they're innate to our nature as human beings made in the image of God. We're made in the image of a moral God. And so we have that sense of right and wrong built into us. It's innate. The proof is how everybody, whether they are relativists or not, everybody shares a sense of moral outrage. Everyone's upset about something. Everyone's saying that is so wrong. Most people think that is correct. Everybody shares that. This is wrong. Whatever it is. It may change from person to person. But you always get that sense from everybody that something is wrong. That's because we're moral at our core. So since right and wrong are innate true things, don't ever use the phrase, the loser phrase, traditional values. That is a phrase for losers. Both words are problematic. You say tradition, you're on the side of tradition. Well, some traditions should die because they're bad. That doesn't help you much. And as for values, one person values it this way and one person values it that way. It's a postmodern relativistic word. It puts the focus back on the individual who may value or may not value. All you learn with traditional values is you're saying, yep, there's just warring camps, and I just told you which warring camp I'm in. But I'm no longer making the claim that things are actually true. So I've actually lost the war for traditional values by using the phrase traditional values. I have cut the cord back to God, back to right and wrong. And if anybody wants to find fault with me, I have one question. Tell me how many times the Bible uses the phrase traditional values. Show me that phrase. Show me how many times Christian theology used that phrase. I will put a time limit on it, before 1950. Show me traditional values in a Christian book before 1950. You can't do it. So you need to speak of truth, of right and wrong, of good and evil. You may, in certain venues, have to speak of virtue or ethics. But don't use the phrase traditional values. That's a postmodern phrase. You've already lost the point. We live in God's reality. We ought to speak in terms that remind ourselves and our listeners that that's the world that we actually live in, the one that God made, in which there are things that are really good and things that are really evil. We live in God's reality, so we need to think clearly for our own peace of mind. And having a firm grasp of reality can really free you from man's errors and prejudices and pressure. Let's imagine a very foolish father who says to his little boy, all boys like football. And let us suppose that this boy is thinking, I don't. All right, now in every era, we have a somewhat estranged father and son at this point. But in our present era, the boy is going to be tempted to think, all boys like football. I do not like football, therefore, I am not a boy. And that is a false conclusion, because the premises were bad. Mind you, that did follow from the premises, but the premises were bad, so never mind. If the premises are false, you get a false conclusion. The transgender movement sometimes advances on the basis of these really rigid and silly stereotypes. This is what a male is. You didn't fit that. Well, then you go over here. But of course, if you're going to be consistent, you've got to be really rigid over here, and you're not going to fit that either. The boy who doesn't like football is a boy who doesn't like football. And for your consolation, all boys here who do not like football, please put up your hand. Yeah, all right, there you go. No, I do like football, but whatever, okay? Football is optional. Being a boy, well, if you want to know what you are, you just go to your bedroom and take your clothes off and take a look, and you find out what you are. I'm aware that there are very, very few people who have some rare genetic disorders where that gets complicated. And so those unusual individuals should be treated with all love and compassion. But for 99.99% of us, it's that simple. You look at your body, and that's who you are. That's one fewer thing in life to worry about. You are a boy, or you are a girl, and you can move on with life. Things can be uncomfortable in your body. You may not enjoy some of the stereotypes of your sex, but that's why we call them stereotypes. Barbies are not mandatory. All the girls who don't like Barbies, put up your hands. Oh, they're doing worse than football, I tell you. Yes, God gives us life, and when He gave us life, He made us male and female. And that's a call from God to live out life as a male human or as a female human. The call is there from God. And so to lay hold of that reality, if you hear somebody say, gender is assigned at birth, you say, no, sex is revealed at birth. Now please notice I changed two words there. I changed gender back to sex, and I changed assigned over to revealed. Let's talk about gender and sex for a second. All right? We used to always speak about the male sex and the female sex. If you'd be filling out a form, it would say sex, male, female. Okay? Older people can be like, yes, used to say sex, male, female. All right? Now, of course, the word sex also applies to the activity by which babies are made. So the word sex is doing double duty, and some people get really nervous about the word. So I think a lot of people were very happy when somebody said, well, I have a bright idea. Let's use the word gender for male and female. And so all the dummies like us out there, we said, okay, we'll call male and female gender. That was not an innocent swap of terms. That was not innocent. That was done very deliberately by those who want to assert that stuff is assigned at birth. Because, you see, the term sex comes from biology, all right? If you want to get offspring, you need a male animal and a female animal. Otherwise, there's no babies. The term gender comes from grammar. We don't do this in English, but lots of languages, for some reason, assign a gender to nouns. Take German, for example. It's der Stuhl, the chair. But the is the masculine the. Der Tisch, the table. Again, the tables are gendered masculine in German. I don't know why tables are gendered masculine, but they are. If you want an example of a feminine noun, well, how about die Frau, the woman? Notice I didn't say der, I said die. Because die is the female gender, the. Now, if you're a girl, oddly enough, that's das. Das Mädchen. You have to grow up before you can become feminine and be die Frau. All right? So, now all that is silly, and particularly English speakers laugh at it because we can't even get our heads around it, but that's how it works. And you have to know what those genders are so you can put the right endings on things, or everybody knows that you're not a native German speaker, so you get it all wrong. All right? So in the realm of grammar, in some languages, nouns are gendered, and it's arbitrary. I haven't studied it, but I'm pretty sure that table and chair won't be masculine across all the different languages that do this. All right? You can have a masculine table in German and a feminine table in Greek, and who knows, right? You're not nouns. You're animals. And as animals, you got to use terms from biology like sex, not terms from grammar class like gender. And that's why it was not an innocent change when you went from sex to gender. You're going from an objective, biological, animal type of word to an arbitrarily assigned, strange, who cares, English type of, no, not English, grammar type of term. Gender is not assigned at birth. Sex is revealed at birth, unless you found out earlier. The baby comes out. What do you got? I got a boy or a girl. How do you know? It's not very hard. They don't come out with clothes on. It's God's reality, and we need to speak and think clearly. Now, it's God's reality, so governments, whether civil or church or parental authority at home, have to deal with the world as it actually is. When the government decides to make a change, say in a crime policy, okay, we're going to abolish cash bail. All right, I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but I do know you better think about this. What will the consequences be of abolishing cash bail? Yes, cash bail is harder on the poor than the rich. True. But what will the consequences be of abolishing it? You can't simply say, it's harder on the poor than the rich, so it has to go. Wait a minute. What are the consequences going to be of this significant change in criminal justice procedure? It doesn't matter if the consequences are unintended. The world is full of unintended consequences. I dare some of us are sitting here are the results of unintended consequences. All right? The world's full of unintended consequences. All right? And when it comes to policy, it doesn't matter if your motives are pure. What matters is what's actually going to happen for real-life people out on the streets. It doesn't matter if it's criminal policy, economic policy, foreign policy, welfare policy, border policy, education policy. People are a certain way. And you have to think through, if I change this rule, if I change this procedure, if we change this law, what's going to happen? And to some extent it may be beyond you, but you have to try to think, what are the consequences? Both the intended consequences that we want to have happen and the unintended consequences that we didn't think of because it wasn't what we wanted to happen. Well, it doesn't matter if you want it to happen. What's going to happen? But someone will say, it doesn't matter because we meant well. No, it does matter because people get hurt. And if you're not willing to think about that, then I say your motives are not pure. Because if you had pure motives, you really wanted to help people, then you would think about how it would impact people. When you always say, yeah, but my motives are pure, you're back to solipsism, where all that matters is you and how you feel about yourself, not what's actually happening to people out in the real world. Governments, which includes parents, includes churches, but especially the government, the civil government, has to deal with reality as it is, and that includes human reality. And ignoring human nature doesn't make you an idealist, it makes you an idiot who does not love, because he's not willing to think about how it's actually going to work out. If you go to school, you get to college, and suddenly you have all this freedom in college. You get to pick a major. Majorly important what you pick for your major. And you know, words are a fine field of study. I am using words right now. You need to be processing words right now. Words are very important. So if you want to study English, well, perhaps that could be a good, straightforward, honest field of study. And maybe not. But it could be. It used to be. Right? But you're older than me. not my age. If you're older than me, English used to be a worthy field of study. But if you go into any other humanity or social science and you say, wait, we're just playing word games in here. We're not getting to reality. Well, then get another field of study. Math is reality, by the way. A little bit far out, but it is reality. Logic is reality. Right? Hard sciences, they have been reality. Because God's reality does work in certain ways. There are secondary causes, our confession says, and what that means is scientific causes. They're good to learn about. Because yes, indeed, you know, gravity. It still works. All right, it's good to know about that stuff. It's good to learn about these scientific things because that's part of how God made the world. And he told us to have dominion over the creation. Part of that is figuring out how God made it to work. Just don't divorce it from God because God rules in all and over all and through all. So we live in God's reality and we're not to hide from that fact. I went to talk to Carl partway through writing my book. He said, what are you writing about? I said, reality and how we want to avoid it. Carl said, well, of course we do. Reality's scary. Reality can be ugly. Of course we don't want reality. I said, thank you, Carl. That's going right in. Chapter 2. There you go. Yes, we live in reality, and that can be scary because it's God's reality, and we don't get to run it the way we might like to go. But the solution is not to run and hide. Run and hide. If you run and hide, you're, well, sort of a philosophical way of getting high on your own supply. You're not in touch with how things actually are. You're just turning inside and trying to hide from it. So the solution is to reach out to God. To God who will make a new heavens and a new earth, even as he made the first heavens and the first earth. There's a prayer that I feel like I don't see anymore. It's a prayer that seems to come from the American Reinhold Niebuhr, popularized in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called the Serenity Prayer, or the Peacefulness Prayer. It goes like this. God, grant me, give me, the serenity, the peace, to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can change, and wisdom to know the difference. Now that's not a comprehensive prayer like the Lord's Prayer, but within its own realm, that's a very good prayer. It's excellent. Lord, give me the peace to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can change, and the wisdom to know the difference. But I feel like I'm not hearing that anymore, because American society doesn't believe that there are things that we cannot change. We think we just need to imagine an alternative reality, and then we'll change it. And that takes the three-line prayer down to one line. Because then we don't need the wisdom to know the difference if there's nothing in the first category. First category is an empty category. I don't need to be wise. I just need courage. The coronavirus reminds us that there are things we cannot change. You can go on real clear politics, at least for until very recently. Hopefully they still have it. They have a little chart at the bottom, all the COVID stats from all the different states. You can click on it and play with the numbers. Sometimes I would go and I would click on deaths per million. You know, there's no pattern there. There's no pattern. First, you got a southern state, and you got a northern state. You got a Democratic state, you got a Republican state. You got a masked up state, you got a forget it state. Right? They're all jumbled up together. We didn't control it. There's things we cannot change. And so the solution is to reach out to God. So to know God's reality, I encourage you to learn your theology. I don't think I've stressed it quite enough. Maybe you'll get some more. But it's in that blue book you get when you join the church. First section is really very, very helpful. You can read it every Sunday afternoon a little bit. Read a little bit of the Westminster Confession of Faith. If you say that's too hard, yeah, maybe it is. You can read the RP testimony in the facing column. That one's easier to read. Learn your theology. Understand the frame of things, of God's reality. And speak clearly. I remember being up the street here at a civic association meeting, and my fellow co-chair brought in an environmental activist, and I was asking a question, and I said, global warming, and she said, we don't say that anymore. We say climate change. And you know, in college, I took a philosophy of science class. And I learned a little rule from a philosopher who went like this. It's a scientific theory if you can disprove it. A scientific theory is one you can disprove. It's actually a pretty good rule. I sat there and I said, oh, we don't say global warming anymore. Is that because you can disprove global warming? Globe don't warm, forget the theory. But how do you disprove climate change? Isn't something always changing? And you'll notice her concern to control my language. We don't say that anymore. We say climate change. Now, I'm not concerned with climate change right now. My concern is with language. With how people try to tell you what you can say. This was so important to this activist. It's going to interrupt my question and tell me, we don't say global warming. Like, why do you care? I thought that was the topic of conversation. So when people say to you, we don't say that anymore, you say, yes, we do. And don't concede anything by saying, yes, I do. Say yes, we do. Because when they tell you we don't say that anymore, they're trying to control you. They're trying to control how you speak so that they can control how people learn and how people think. So you have to push right back. Yes, we do. Yes, we say global warming. Now, something that shouldn't be said, don't say that, right? But assuming that we're on good ground, yes, we do. We do say that. And I won't let you manipulate words to create new realities, because you can't create new realities, but you can affect how people think. And that's what we have to push back again. So use true words, like truth, not traditional value. Like sex is revealed at birth. Like we are male and female. And don't be afraid. COVID has revealed a lot. First of all, that there's a reality beyond the reach of our words. Changing words did not kill off the virus. Because God reigns and man does not. So what we need for a virus is medicine. We don't need new words. And because God has put Jesus on his throne, we do not need to be afraid. Because he'll be with us to the end of the age. Let's live boldly in God's reality. Give him thanks and praise and honor. And speak truly without fear. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you have made all things, that we live in your world. Not in the world of our imagining, or the world of the government's imagining, or the world of a tech genius's imagining. We thank you that we live in your reality. Help us, Lord, to live humbly and thankfully before you. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.